Subhuti, if one bodhisattva bestows in charity sufficient of the seven treasures to fill as many worlds as there are sand grains in the river Ganges, and another, realizing that all things are egoless, attains perfection through patient forbearance. It's very important to need the kantipara, this ongoing simplicity, the discipline of simplicity. Non-clinging. The merit of the latter will far exceed that of the former. Why is this, Subhuti? Because all bodhisattvas are insentient, as to they don't care for getting involved in rewards of merit. They are just embodiments of merit. Sometimes they allow us an embodiment of compassion. He doesn't think of himself as practicing. For example, if you want to make a kind of mental argument, if this being, according to Nyingma Khartoum, is an embodiment of white Medusa, you don't go around and say, I'm an embodiment of white Medusa. It is. It just simply is. A lucid intellect, it's just there, as it were. Now, all of you are embodiments, in the positive sense, of something extremely meritorious. But it doesn't, you know, the one who thinks of themselves as such and such a bodhisattva is no such and such a bodhisattva. It just doesn't happen. And that's why I sort of hesitate to tell you that, because any kind of concept. It's not even an embodiment of white Manjusri. You can make a concept. But nevertheless, there is a manifestation of qualities. And you can take every being in an aspect as an embodiment of them. It may be worthwhile for you to figure out which vibration, if you wish that word, manifestation, is the top quality in your being. And this is a dangerous territory, because you know those of your egoism about it. But if you could see it dispassionately, I have to stress that, dispassionately, well, what are you really on about? That manifestation, what is it? Are you into music? Maybe it's Manjusri. So on, and something really wrong. And that's why also it's very important from the arising yoga standpoint to see where the proclivities of that are. How does that mind function? So, in a way, now this is a big error, all right? But it might give you a glimpse. Might think of all women potentially as mothers, and little girls focus on the faces of beings. But in other words, they're people orientated, and from the standpoint of nurturing. This is an ideal world, all right? I mean, there are other things happen. And so it may be orientated that way. So it would, its natural proclivity would be to nurturing. Giving and so on, and possibly Aryan chain raising, whatever. And the man, the little boys, looking at objects, how to work objects, I was in objects, putting them all together, you see. And spatial relationships. And generally speaking, the entire of humanity kind of divide on that grounds. People or thing orientated. So it may be, but not necessarily so, that you might go and have a deficiency in working objects. Now, by the way, a woman in the house certainly has to use objects all the time. So this is, I'm just telling you what the great divide generally is. Nice. That man may be a little short on people relationship, nuances of people relationships and so on. I'm not terribly interested, you know, in general. But there are many variations on the theme of humanity. So we find that eventually you have a meritorious side, and then you're in a difficulty of being able to find it, but not cling to the idea, not like identify. It's just what's happening. It would be silly for someone, I'm a mother, I'm a musician, I'm a mechanic. Yes, no, I mean, there's a way that you're operating. If you want to relate it to you, you know, how you function, what function, there's a question for you. There are four functions according to Jung, and they're also introverted and extroverted. Which of the bodhisattvas' principles would be in that? Would Vajrapani, for example, be in the intuitive, right? Would the Arya Chenrezigs or the Taras be in the feeling function? That's how you're functioning. The majusri in the, this, you know, you understand. And then the sensing function, then you have to, the question. Notice that every Tibetan has a great deal of the sensing function because you can see them. You know, the sensing function frequently is the artist. You see shapes.
Click.
You go, they're born. They're born with these types with the camera. They come out of the womb with the camera. And before they partake of the breast, they have to put it in the box. There it is. Click, zoop. Right? Then they can go to it. This is the way of it. This is again sensing function. How the senses, impressions of the outer world affect. Some people are not terribly affected by the outer. They're in their own world intellectually. The world, you know, could go by. It's nothing. Then there are other people who really react to the outer. They're very affected by it. Sensing function. But the question is raised from a relative standpoint, which of the bodhisattvas would best represent that? Because they're embodiments, and they're embodiments of the five jhana buddhas. The teaching, there are really five sensing, five functions, not four. Ways in which wisdom manifests. It's easier sometimes to see it in other beings, to see it in other beings. If all beings are the Buddha, then there's a Buddhic manifestation, and you see the other being. Which one of the Dhyana Buddhas is that the flavor of? Very interesting. They are insentient, or they don't consider, by the way, the rewards of the merit, the strength of the being. You must remember that merit is also the word strength. And it's very good to know, in a dispassionate way, your strength, or see it as strength. Maybe you are an artist, and the society has values about what is better than something else. At the moment, it's probably a hockey player with the gold medal or something. You understand what I'm saying? They have values in the society, what's up and what's down. And an artist, well, whereas, and hence you may turn your talent down, you may not even see it. Science is where it's at. Do you understand what I'm trying to say? And so you may come down the strength and you may not see it. Well, that's the way you function. And so that's a Buddhic manifestation. You know, in a way, you can't respect yourself until you respect what you're doing, how you're manifesting. So what is, how is your consciousness manifesting its interests and its abilities, its talents, so on? They're not shared by everyone. You may think, oh well, the intuitive is the highest. And in a way, it's always put up there, so you fall into this error, intuition. But intuition has to be also worked on and brought into play. Introverted intuition sometimes becomes extrovert, you know, be able to accomplish it on the plane, not merely get the glimpse of it. Well, I think that's enough about that. It's, I grant to you, it's a sort of gray area. I don't know if I can actually get a dispassionate view of me in action, but that would be good. And through that, you see what your interests are. Try to link it up with either Bodhisattva, you know, or a Buddha manifestation. So Bodhisattvas who achieve merit, strength, by the way, always remember the word merit is the word strength. Punya karma, be strong action. At the end of this, you know, we go, idante punya karma. This is a strong action. Study of the Dharma is strong in karmic results. It may be a little bit more invisible to you, but there's very strong strength in the being. You should not be fettered with the desire for rewards. That's impure motivation. Thus it is said that the rewards of merit are not received. In a way, the results are immediate, so it's not a result. I do this, therefore I get that. The doing of the thing in itself is indicating the strength in the being. The reward is immediate. And that is stressed when you meditate on the Triple Gem. Immediate fruition. And you want to get the idea is the fact that I'm thinking about enlightenment is a reward in itself. Do you understand? A human being with that good thought in the mind, that is strength already. I mean, you could be thinking of murdering or killing, right? Rapine, avarice, but instead of that occurring, you have the reward of thinking good, peaceful, is immediate fruition. And that is stressed again in the meditation of the Triple Gem. If you read it, you would come to that. You need that phrase, immediate fruition. Wherever you at, it's immediate fruition. So therefore, that's what the text means by the merit is not received. It's inbuilt. And you don't get merit from somebody else. You share the merit, share the strength. That's because any human being, or the thought of sharing, is because any human being who's in a good state is in a state of automatic sharing. All dharmas are interdependent. All dharmas. You can't see an object in a dark night. You have no eyes. And you understand? There's no light. Or you have no organs. Or all the dharmas, you have to have this, plus this, plus this, plus this, in order for anything. Again, you should meditate on more and more, I believe, on the path. I'm giving you a general overall picture on the Pratichasamutpada. In fact, the Diamond Sutra is on the Pratichasamutpada. I may not use the word, but it's an exposition of that, the laws of interdependent origination. For example, this is theory. Just look at pure theory. You take mole. Now, mole is the prophecy or prognostication system of Tibet. Right? I thought I had the other day, I brought the cards for the dice. And this is a bit of a step for you that you really have to think. It says because all dharmas are interdependent, therefore it can happen. If I have the thought that I wish to see, because all the dharmas, the card that comes up, it's in the whole body of all the dharma, inseparable from all the dharma. And you meditate, you have to have that insight of Manjusri, of the interdependent origination. When you have that, the prophecies are accurate. And they're always accurate. They may not give you the answer that you want, but they'll give you the answer as to your state. And if you have done the meditation on Manjusri, you're in that state, therefore the answers will conform to unfoldment. So developments. But in any case, they'll be accurate. And in one sense, if you can see very deeply, you cannot make that an inaccurate prophecy. Perfect tranquility. So, Bhuti, if anyone should say that the Tathagata comes or goes or sits or reclines, he fails to understand my teaching. Why? Because Tathagata, which is stressed in big letters, is one dwelling in suchness. It is kind of vision. Meister Eckhart says it has no hither and whence or whither. Therefore, in other words, the state is stable. My advice to you, to analyze your being, again, dispassionately, face the facts, are you doing a lot of whence and whither? That is, rise and fall in the course of the day. You're coming from whence, you're thinking about something in the past, going to something in the future, your whence and withering. Oh, how they whence and wither. In the past, what's going to happen, and this and that and the other. How much are you spending? Never mind, but let's forget about the past. So, how much of the whence and withering are you doing? Do you understand what I mean? Mm-hmm. Go from here, go to there. And the rise and fall in the course of the day. Sometimes you're more wincing, and sometimes you're more withering. There's nothing like a contemplation or a future. I wake up and say, to wither the present, or the past, to wither, to put a dead stop to the possibilities of the here and now. Then you have to catch that mind doing this. That's not the target. That's not the dwelling in suchness. It is kind. Very much business. Sin, walk off. Not being upset, right? Being thrown into, right, excessive reactions. And of course, that's the very first thing you do, because you have a quality of non-clinging awareness. And sometimes it's definitely non, right? It's clinging. The desire to cling. Awareness or memories or concepts. And the law is that the more you escape, the way you escape from the present is fantasy. That's why even the thought of enlightenment has to be abandoned. Oh, you know, in the sweet mind, there'll be a Buddha path. Dwelling there, not going to go over here, not watching the whence and withering. So it's extremely important that you have a feel for that. See, that section is a little discourse on perfect tranquility. And it's not possible for you to dwell in the whence and the wither without the disturbance of the tranquility. And I want to stress that the beings who dwell and have fantasies about the future are technically, in psychology or psychotherapy, psychoanalysis, are masochism. It's masochism. Dreams of the future put you to sleep in the present. And its possibility. All universal dharmas are in this moment. There is no need for whence and whither. And the section is dedicated to perfect tranquility. It's a very short section. Not seeking this form, sight, right? This sound. I mean, you can have sound. This is not the issue. It's clinging, even in your senses, for this one, that one, on about that. And of course, also what I've stated about this particular form of enlightenment as opposed to that one, making an opposition. You can see that with people. I mean, you get his little phrases over and over again. The dialogues between men and women. No patience for the other ways of existence. They have no validity. Very frequently it comes to that. They don't know what's important. No, they're big trouble. all those mushy people things. It's all those dead object things, or things, you understand. They don't realize that different consciousness functions in different ways, but they're mirrors. But there's, the way in which you function blinds you to other ways. I mean, any appreciation for other ways. I think I couldn't say it too many times. If you want to really practice awareness, you really have to watch whence and whither. If you do the whence, you color the present. You make it dead. The past has killed the present. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Straightforward, mm-hmm. Darling. You preconceive what you're going to do in the future, that means you deaden the present possibilities. There's no hope in the present. And I have to create a new hope. So on. But masochism. You can define a being as a masochist by the ability or not ability to handle the present. They tell themselves stories. It's very straightforward. Very, very straightforward. You've taken over maybe the mother role. Eh? Mummy, tell me a story. I'm going to sleep. Go to sleep, child. I'll tell you a story. Oh, that's a nice story. Well, that's about it, strangely enough. Your homework is, of course, to practice non-discriminating loving kindness. That is ongoing loving kindness. Try to get into that capacity. Not to like one being more than another. Or pray for that one. I'll pray for that one. Sayadaw in Burma, you said at the end of the day, say your prayers for every of loving kindness, for everyone that you met in the course of the day. Mm-hmm. For example, all of you, he would recall your face and figure, whatever it was, specifically, mm-hmm. and pray for you. I use a different method. I'm entirely non-discriminatory. I pray for me first. Think about it. The vehicle, this is well, then what? If this is well, be better for others. And then for all those who are connected, indirectly, that's the second category. The third category is for all human beings. Then all sentient creatures on earth, regardless of their manifestations, right? And then all universal beings, extraplanetary, extraterrestrial. This is my discipline. And going out from this to the whole universe, and then back down again, or back in again, whatever you want, kate, from the universal well-being to planetary well-being, to human well-being, to being specifically indicated by this present existence, right, request, and then back to this being. And that also accomplishes the expansion of light and the contraction of light back. So, but you may find some other method. Okay. That's all. Suchness needs no comment. It needs no comment. You may make all the comments you want. And that's where it is. And then you have to think, I don't need to make a comment. And let suchness be suchness. Not need to make an action. You make an action all the time. Whether you do or you don't, or whatever. Activity is constant. Yeah. So where's the need? The need is a failure of realization. All beings in need are in suffering. You know, I remember one vicar in London someone who was sort of a Vedanta back, you know, background. Right? All life is one. You know, they're very definitive. All life is one. One what? That's awakening. So your one thing is non-discriminatory loving kindness. Plus the problems I have, what I outlined today, and the respect of how you're manifesting. Even if you have negatives, you know, you're petty and this and that and the other. But what is that? I mean, it cannot be there unless it serves some purpose. I mean, even a neuroses is trying to help you survive. So you're peculiar. But that's the way, when you add it up, that the only way the consciousness knows to survive. Mm-hmm. Think about that. Mm-hmm. There was a threat to the being, and then so it responded in such and such a way. Mm-hmm. Right on. You don't take what you come to us.